Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. 70 years ago this month, the worst civilian air disaster of World War II was sustained by Allied forces, and it's the topic of the book entitled The Freckleton, England Air Disaster, the B-24 crash that killed 38 preschoolers and 23 adults, August 23rd, 1944. Joining me in conversation is its author, history and political science professor at Cabrini College, James Headke. Jim, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
A student of history with a focus on the Civil War, World War II, but tell us the personal connection of the story where how your now wife, then 9-year-old girl, struck up a pen pal correspondence that lasted for decades.
My wife, at the age of 9, decided she'd love to have a pen pal. She paged through a preteen magazine called Ingenue. And in it, she found that you could get a pen pal in England. All you needed to do was send stamps. She did. And as a result, she was assigned Jackie Whittle. And Jackie Whittle was a year older, lived in the village of Freckleton. And they communicated from 1959 all the way to 1987 when we finally made our way over to England with all our children. We got to the little village of Freckleton, and it's stuck really in the northwest part of England. Not many tourists there. It's not really a tourist attraction. I said then to Jackie, I suppose you don't get many Americans up here. And she said, well, during World War II, we did. And in fact, our little village, Freckleton, was called Little America.
And that's because there was a Wharton airfield, which then became known as Base Air Depot 2, BAD 2, as the Americans came over and utilized it for Air Force repair. I understand the population of that airfield was around 10,000, roughly 10 times the size of the then population indigenous to the region.
Well, absolutely. There were, at its height, 10,500 airmen assigned to the field, and the village at that time had about 900 inhabitants. That was probably reduced by the sons and sweethearts and brothers who had gone off to war.
Now, that period, the spring and summer of 44, if I recall, that's when the tides of fortune were turning in favor of the Allies.
Absolutely. We had the D-Day invasion on June 6th, and on August 23rd, the date of the crash, the Soviets had liberated Romania and captured the German 6th Army. Paris was about to be liberated. Noum 4 was liberated by American troops in the Pacific. And in fact, diplomatic efforts were breaking out at Dumbarton Oaks for the start of the United Nations. So it was quite a time of euphoria for the Allies as we approached late August.
Take us to that day.
It's August 23rd, 1944. The weather forecast said early sunshine with a bit of cloud and rain showers in the morning, very typical for that day. Scheduled to go up in the air on August 23rd was a two B-24 bombers, one named the Classy Chassis 2 because it had a pinup of an Alberta Vargas woman.
Well, stop right there. And interspersed in the book, and it's such a serious and heavy topic, you have elements of, well, if not humor, certainly levity, and describe nose art.
Nose art. Nose art was a way of...
No relation to Mozart.
Exactly. Nose art was a way that airmen personalized their aircraft. And generally, there were three genres, some comedic characters, maybe Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck. You would also see Nazis being portrayed rightfully as evil individuals. And then, of course, the pinup girl. And as one American pilot said, very famous fellow, the captain of the Memphis Belle, said that when the Germans attacked a fleet of American bombers, it was like flying into a lingerie catalog.
Back to that morning of the 23rd, fate conspired. It was supposed to take off around 8:30 in the morning, but was detained, though, by some 2 hours.
Absolutely. John Blumenthal, who was the pilot who was going to take the Classy Chassis 2 up at 8:30, was also officer of the day. He was called away from the flight shack by the requirements of the officer of the day. We don't know quite, the records have been lost. We don't know quite what called him away, but he had to scrub the 8:30 flight of the classy chassis and move it to 10:30 a.m. in the morning.
At that point, the weather had worsened measurably.
Well, at 10:30 in the morning, there were the light showers came in. This was, at this point, quite not enough to scrub any flights because it was quite usual for Northwest England to get these early showers. So the flight did go up at 10:30 in the morning. And once the flight got aloft, that's when the bad weather rapidly approached the village of Freckleton.
Has it been determined that weather is the primary, if not exclusive, cause of this accident?
The official report by the United States Army Air Forces stated that the cause of the crash was unknown, but suggested that the pilot erred in trying to land the aircraft in a thunderstorm.
So suggesting human error as well. Of course, this is in context of it being an era prior to black box recorders, and there weren't lots of eyewitnesses, apparently.
Absolutely. No black box recorders. The wreckage was really badly burned, and I think that there were probably less than four eyewitnesses to the crash, each of whom had a different story.
Your volume is also the story of the Holy Trinity Infant School.
Yes, absolutely. The classy chassis 2 went up on the test flight. It was ordered to land because of really severe weather. As it's approaching the airfield at Wharton at about 10:45 in the morning, John Blumenthal, the pilot, realizes he cannot make the landing. He will bring up his landing gear. He'll bank hard to the right to try to peel off and get out of the thunderstorm and go to Scotland. He's then caught in a downdraft. He will tumble through the village of Freckleton. He'll clip three houses, smash and destroy the Sad Sack Cafe, and then the nose of the aircraft and the 2,700 gallons of 100-octane fuel will spill into the infants' wing of the Holy Trinity School. At that point, killing 38 of the 41 children in the school and also their two teachers.
Primarily 4 to 6 year old children.
4 to 6 years old.
And in the context of the size of the town and the enormity of the disaster, you refer to it as a lost generation.
A lost generation. Only three children survived. One, David Madden, was not from the village. Ruby Whittle and George Carey were villagers. So the town actually, the village actually went on without that grade level.
In the course of digesting this heavily researched book, you bring out the point that there were not many media accounts specifically about this disaster, and certainly U.S. papers and even in England.
That's absolutely true. The London Times will carry the story the next day, August 24th. It'll be on page 2. If you looked at page 1, it was all about the beginning of the liberation of Paris and other events that were going on in the war. In the New York Times, it was stuck on page 8. Every day thereafter, it slid into the back pages, the recesses of the media at that time.
So what avail did you turn to get most of the information that is here?
Well, the information, most of it was gathered from the United States Army Air Force's archives in the Maxwell Air Force Base in Alabama, also from local news accounts. The Lancashire papers heavily covered this story, and Freckleton is in Lancashire County. So there was a wealth of information from the local newspapers, also from the airmen that were stationed at the base, especially Ralph Scott and Thomas Miller, two sergeants who were present at the time of the crash, and also the villagers. The villagers were very helpful in providing their stories to me.
Interesting, perhaps, in the context of modern history, that there was very little finger-pointing or recrimination.
Absolutely no finger-pointing. The British looked at this as an accident in a time of war. Americans took full responsibility for what happened. The Americans will pay for the funeral. The Americans will also build a memorial to the children in Freckleton, which is still there today, the Freckleton Memorial Park, which is still maintained by monies donated from the men from Bad 2 that had been placed in trust for that purpose.
Are there still survivors who are either of the accident directly or residents who are still in the vicinity now?
Oh, yes. Yes. George Carey, who was 4, and Ruby Whittle, who was 5, both of them survived the air crash. George Carey prefers not to talk about the crash and, of course, is not interviewed in the book. Ruby Whittle Curell absolutely wants to talk about the crash. She wants her schoolmates to be remembered. She wants their legacy to live on. She constantly speaks to people who are asking about the crash. And every anniversary will give a recounting of the crash or will have some part to play in the commemoration ceremonies.
Your book is a historical account, actually, dating back to the times of Romans in Freckleton and then fast-forwarding. Tell us what it's like today.
Freckleton today is quite different. It has 6,000 inhabitants, and the airfield is still in use. The airfield is used by BAE Systems. They produce, among other things, aircraft for war. It's an experimental base, so you see all kinds of unusual aircraft coming out of the Wharton Field. And a couple of the aircraft that listeners might recognize would be the Typhoon fighter, the Tornado fighter, and the Nimrod submarine hunter.
So
all
is that
came
the,
out of Wharton.
So is that the primary employer in the region?
They are the primary employer in the region. Part of the American base is still there. The command center is still there. Some of the buildings used to billet American soldiers are still on the property, but it is a state-of-the-art airfield at this point in time.
As you alluded to D-Day and other major events that perhaps obscured this accident, how does one put this in the context of the horrific tens of millions of lives that were lost over the course of World War II?
I think it's just probably one of the thousands of small tragedies that occurred during the war that really need to be taken out of the dustbins of history and looked at by the public in general. I look at the individuals who died in this crash as heroes. I look at these people as individuals who gave their life, just as the men did on the beaches of Normandy, so that we could have the freedom and liberty that we have now. And I think that someone has to be the voice so that the darkness of war doesn't overpower the light of peace and the legacy of these unknown heroes goes untold.
Some might see it also as a cautionary tale that when one engages in war, there is the potential for all kinds of collateral unintended damage as well, including loss of life.
All right. And we've seen that, in fact, just recently with the downing of the Malaysian airliner, where over 80 children, I believe, were lost on that flight, the capricious randomness of war and the tragedy it brings.
Professor Hedke, thanks so much for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
James Hedke, professor of history and political science at Cabrini College and author of The Freckleton, England Air Disaster, the B-24 crash that killed 38 preschoolers and 23 adults, August 23rd, 1944.